You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
BAM Cinematheque, the repertory film program at BAM Rose Cinemas, celebrates its 10th anniversary this summer. And to mark the occasion, they are launching a new film festival called BAM Cinema Fest. The 16-day events will run from June 17th through the 2nd of July and include 18 new features and documentaries with filmmaker Q&As, outdoor screenings, an all-night movie marathon, and other special programs. With me now to tell us all about it are BAM's program director, Florence Almazzini, along with two of the filmmakers represented, Emily Kunstler and Sarah Kunstler, whose documentary about their father, William Kunstler, called William Kunstler Disturbing the Universe, will have its New York premiere at the festival. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Florence, there are so many film festivals. Why did BAM Cinematheque decide to launch a new one now?
Not just to make you crazy. We had
It could fill up my whole year, you know. Oh, here's another film festival.
Then you could travel. We had a really good relationship with Sundance Institute, and we did a festival called, in a way, the Best of Sundance at BAM for 3 years. It was said to be a three-year relationship, and we learned a lot from this. We also realized that because we were coming to our 10-year anniversary, we wanted to bring this experience to another level and find a way to bring all these new films, all these great films we see in festival and don't always come out to, you know, in distribution or, like, it's not easy to see them, and bring them to BAM. And there's so many films that we see and don't play, and a lot of them are made in New York or made in Brooklyn, and we just wanted to bring this to our audience.
So you also want to do a local thing. But there is there's so much competition, isn't there? How do you wind up getting premieres?
Well, there's a lot of competition. There's the New York Film Festival and Tribeca, and New Director, all these things, but none of them, I feel, really like focus on the new independent American scene, which could be called the new Hollywood. And I felt there's a gap there, so that could be a little bit of a niche for us. Mm-hmm. And also because we work all year round, we also have an audience that comes all year round and is really excited and discovering new films.
Most of these are story films, feature films. How many other documentaries other than Emily and Sarah's?
We have 5 new documentaries. There's actually one on Iran, so we were talking about Iran recently, called The Glass House. It's but is based in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So we have an Iranian film based in Brooklyn.
And most of these films are based in New York.
Broken Right is based in about a New York artist, and so it's filmed also a little bit in California, and that's exciting for our audience to see the life of Broken Right.
Emily, has your film been shown before? Was it shown at Sundance?
Yeah, we premiered at Sundance in January, and we've been traveling quite a bit with the film since then. But we're thrilled to be able to bring it for the first time to a New York audience.
Well, what's the reaction outside of New York to William Kunstler, who is so New York?
It's been really positive. My father was a polarizing figure in a very divided world. But there are people from both sides and from the middle that have come forward to us to tell us how much his story affects them and how much they relate to it. And we tell the story from our perspective.
And not always approvingly.
No, we raise questions, and we allow the audience to raise questions through the questions that we ask.
Sarah, your father died 14 years ago. Had the two of you always planned to make a film about him?
You know, it was one of those things that seemed to kind of happen accidentally on purpose. All of a sudden, we were nearing 30, and we decided that it was the right thing to do, but it didn't really, in retrospect, I don't think it was really a choice. It was something that our whole lives, I think, we're working towards.
Well, because even if other people... Has anybody else made a film about him?
No, nobody has.
Which would come as a surprise to me. But this was also a way, I'm assuming, for you to come to terms with some of the mixed feelings you had about him and his career.
Well, he passed away when we were in our late teens, and in a sense, it kind of arrested our relationship with him. We left off with him at a point where we were feeling very oppositional and very unsure. And the film was a way for us to look at him as adults, to reconnect and to kind of really come to terms with what we felt.
Well, the two of you were born after the most famous things in his life. They were already history. So you were... by the time you came along, you were seeing him at the end of his career. And this film, as we said, is not hagiography, you pretty much argue that he kind of went off the rails at a certain point. Do you feel that you wanted to be the ones to say that about him, not somebody who didn't know him as well?
Well, you know, we grew up during a very different period. We heard stories about the cases that he fought in the civil rights movement and in Chicago, the anti-war movement, the American Indian movement, but they were just these mythologies. During our lifetime, he took a lot more unpopular cases, cases that lost him a lot of the support he'd had even in the liberal community. So we really felt the need to go back and ask questions about the cases that he took. I mean, our father was never a lawyer for hire. He always chose the cases that he took. So when we felt like to go back and ask those questions, we really needed to dive into the cases he took before we were born and try to find some sort of symmetry. I mean, when you're a kid, you look for your parent to be a consistent person. No one is a consistent person, and I think the biggest thing that we learned through this process was that the search for consistency is sort of flawed in itself, and that in order to make change in the world and in order to live an interesting life, you really can't be consistent.
And you can't expect your parents to not have clay feet at times.
That's true.
Do you think that he had an instinct for knowing which cases were really important, or do you think his talent was for making them important?
This is Sarah. I think it's both. I think that he was a person who, when he saw a case that was difficult, when he saw a case that was polarizing, he wasn't afraid to take a stand on it. Sometimes those cases ended up being important cases. Sometimes they ended up not being important cases. But I think that ultimately what Emily and I learned through this process was that we're proud of him for taking a stand when it was unpopular to do so, no matter what the outcome was.
You have a lot of documentary footage from Wounded Knee, Attica, the Chicago conspiracy trials. Is this all in the public record? Did you turn up any new stuff?
It's hard to say. I mean, that was really the most fun part of the process was finding, collecting this archive. It's almost like our father left little trails for us to find along the way. We got his entire FBI file, which was really exciting to receive, and parts of that we've used in the film.
We have a clip. Can we play a little something?
Well, how are we going to stop this medieval torture that's going on in this courtroom? This man wants to defend himself. Father, this is an unholy disgrace of the law that's going on in this courtroom.
When you begin to keep your word around here that you gave the court, perhaps things can be done.
I just feel so utterly ashamed, Your Honor, to be an American lawyer at this moment.
You should be
ashamed. I know I should be.
You should be ashamed of your conduct in this case.
Well, it wasn't always easy to understand, but that was a very heated exchange between your father and Judge Hoffman during the Chicago conspiracy trials, in which they're both accusing each other of being disgraces
yes.
to the American judicial system. He also interviewed a number of the participants, Bobby Seale, Dennis Banks, Daniel Berrigan, even Jean Fritz, one of the jurors in the Chicago 7 trial. Was being his daughters a help or a hindrance in getting people to cooperate?
I think it was both. There are people who agreed to be interviewed by us because we were William Kunstler's daughters, and there's people who refused to be interviewed by us for the same reason. We went through we had a lot of conversations about how we were going to represent ourselves in the film and whether we were going to put it forward that we were the people making this film or whether we were going to stand back. And ultimately, we decided that whether it hurt us or helped us, we couldn't hide who we were. And that the people who spoke to us in the way they did because of who we were. So we had to use that.
Well, there was, as you point out, tension in the household when he decided to defend El Sayed Nasser, the man who assassinated Rabbi Meir Kahana. Your mother tried to talk him out of doing that. How old were you at that time?
How old
Sarah,
were
you were you're the older?
Yeah, I'm older. I think that was that in 89? We were in our early teens.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you were hearing all sorts of stuff from your schoolmates, and you also had strong opinions of your own.
Yeah, I mean it was definitely a challenging time. The parents of the children that we went to school with would argue with our father through their children through us. So it was an interesting dynamic.
And then there was the Central Park Jogger case where he represented Yusuf Salam. And everybody was angry with him for that, even though he turned out to be defending an innocent man, as we finally discovered years later.
Yeah, you know, the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is an organization that he's one of the founders of, would not support him in that case. And it's not a secret. Michael Ratner, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, uses that case now when he's trying to get the center to take important cases. When he was arguing, when there was a debate within the center, which represents a lot of the Guantanamo inmates, whether they should take on those cases, he actually read the staff a portion from my dad's autobiography about how the center wouldn't help him.
Well, it's interesting because there's so much pressure that's applied. People were picketing in front of your house, weren't they? And I'm assuming you as children might have felt you were endangered yourself.
I mean, you only have one childhood, so we never grew up in a different household. But it definitely, I mean, it wasn't always comfortable. But it was also a lot of fun.
But then came the cases that are hard to defend. Leona Helmsley, John Gotti, Larry Davis, the drug dealer who shot several cops. I know your father took that argument that many lawyers take, that everyone is the Constitution guarantees that everyone should have good counsel. But did you go along with that?
Well, I mean, I feel like each of those cases he took for a different reason. I mean, there were certainly some cases that he took for the money to support the family, because most of the work that he did not pay anything. Mm-hmm. He represented John Gotti on a constitutional issue. His right to counsel, which I think a lot of other lawyers would support that choice. And he represented Larry Davis because he thought it was a real case of self-defense, and it would highlight corruption in the police department in a very unique way.
You include some home movies from your childhood, also a clip from New York One News where you say that you don't want to be lawyers when you grow up, and then, Sarah, you became a lawyer. How did you betray that?
You know, I became a lawyer, and we didn't put that in the film. But I'm glad to be outing myself, because I think it's important to acknowledge the hypocrisy of of that statement. I think.
Well, you were young.
I think that people change, and I think that ultimately, what our father taught us was that we needed to find ways to make change in the world, and I thought I could do that as an attorney.
And Emily, you've done that as a producer for Democracy Now!, the very political news show. So in an odd way, the both of you have followed in your father's footsteps.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you want nothing to do with your parents, and you don't want to be associated with any of the choices they make. But in our adult life, we've ended up and I think only through the process of making this film did we end up seeing the connections between the choices we made.
Although it is also interesting to see the two of you making a film together. That means you still get along.
Yeah.
We hope you do.
Yeah.
After making the film?
We do. We're almost better friends today than we were before. But we've been making films together for the past 10 years about racial discrimination in the criminal justice system.
Florence, can you tell us about some of the other films in the festival and some of the other special events that you have planned?
Of course. As you mentioned, we have 18 new films, but it's only one part of the festival. We have 37 feature films. We're also doing an all-night movie marathon with crazy film like Before We Were Scientologists or the stoner comedy genre. We also have Arnaud Desplechin, who's coming from Paris to do a carte blanche, and he selected two films that he's going to introduce to the audience.
You have a free outdoor screening. Where
we
would
have
that be?
Some outdoor screening of a really interesting documentary about the food system described by two young girls. It's called What's on Your Plate? We're also showing the William Kunstler film outdoor. We have one indoor screening with Sarah, Emily, and Amy Goodman, and other people coming, and one screening outdoor. So it's going to be a lot of fun to do all these things.
And we have made available to our audience a complete schedule of BAM Cinema Fest. Just go to our show page at WNYC.org, and you'll find links to the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Brooklyn Academy of Music, that used to be just a wonderful place to see dance and music, and now
movies.
Theater, movies, pretty much, and a good cafe as well.
Mm-hmm. There's always something happening at BAM.
Thank you all so much for being with us today. I've been talking with the program director of the Brooklyn Academy of Music's cinema, Florence Almozzini, and two filmmakers whose film will be shown as part of this BAM Cinema Fest starting on the 17th, which is what?
That's Wednesday.
Wednesday. And running through the 2nd. Their film is called William Kunstler, Disturbing the Universe. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.